You're listening to the Blue Ridge True Crime Podcast, bringing you compelling true crime stories from the Appalachian Mountains and beyond. I'm your host, Alfred Dockery. Grab your hat and the lantern, and let's get on the trail. Welcome to Season 2. Today's episode is The Fugitive Thru-Hiker, On the Run on the AT. On a cold February day in 2009, James Hammes, the controller for a Lexington, Kentucky branch of a family-owned Pepsi bottling company, drove north to company headquarters in Cincinnati for what he assumed would be a routine meeting. He probably thought it would be about new cover sheets for TPS reports or some other fine point of corporate minutia. His boss, the company's chief financial officer, met him at the door and ushered him into a conference room. Waiting for him in the room was FBI agent Pamela Mattson. She wanted to talk to him about accounting irregularities, a phantom vendor account, and $8.7 million in missing money. Talk about a revolting development. Mattson had the following to say about the meeting. Quote, "Generally, when someone is confronted with a situation where there is such a preponderance of evidence, the person will say, 'Yeah, okay, I did it. Not Mr. Hammes. He completely denied any part of it,'" unquote. Hammes requested an attorney and ended the meeting quickly, probably the smartest thing he'd done in years. Mattson walked him out to his car. 3 weeks later, Hammes vanished, abandoning his daughter and second wife. The Cincinnati police found his wallet and cell phone in a desolate high-crime part of town. Bismarck on the trail. About a year after the clean-cut accountant James Hammes disappeared, a thru-hiker with shoulder-length hair and a Jerry Garcia beard using the name Bismarck started walking the Appalachian Trail. A thru-hiker is someone who hikes or attempts to hike the entire length of the trail, about 2,200 miles or 3,500 kilometers, within a single season. These hikers typically begin their journey in Georgia during the spring and head north toward Maine. Trail names are a rite of passage for thru-hikers. Some pick their own trail names, others are given trail names by fellow hikers based on their personalities or experiences on the trail. It gives hikers a sense of community and operates as a thin barrier between life on the trail and life back in the mundane world. Bismarck had chosen his trail name. If asked, he told some of his fellow hikers that he picked the name because he was from Bismarck, North Dakota. He told other hikers he was from Wisconsin, which was true. He said his wife had died and that hiking the trail was how he was dealing with the grief. He didn't mention his second wife, who was very much alive. He sometimes mentioned having two daughters and said that an investment he made in a software company had given him the money to hike the trail. Other times, he relocated the software company to Bismarck. He got more mileage out of that software company than most people get out of a Toyota hybrid. The stories were an interesting and believable collection of fact and fiction. Bismarck rapidly became a prominent and well-liked figure in the thru-hiking community. His face appeared in numerous photographs, selfies, and in hikers' online journals. He also corresponded with David Miller, the author of a popular AT guidebook, providing updates on things like hotel rates for hikers. Perhaps Bismarck's most famous snapshot showed him engaged in a water gun battle with other hikers. It was not unusual for hikers to ask newbies if they had met Bismarck. He became something of a roving touchstone. Around 2011, he was frequently seen with a female companion, trail name Hopper. They became a well-known couple in the hiking community, with fellow travelers describing them as boyfriend and girlfriend. Some hikers thought they were married. Once the couple traveled for 3 weeks with a hiker whose trail name was RW. When asked what it stood for, he would say something like, "You tell me." At some point, while exchanging small talk, RW told them that he was a retired federal bank examiner. That must have sent Bismarck into at least a minor panic, which begs the question, was he paranoid, suspicious of each hiker he met along the AT, or supremely confident that they would never find him here? Bismarck spent multiple winters at a hostel in East Hanover, Maine. He helped build a garage there in return for a discount on his rent. He also spent some time in the off-season, at an apartment in Fort Wayne, Indiana. On the trail, He built a reputation for being a smiling Catholic who performed many unexpected acts of kindness, often called trail magic on the AT. Bismarck wore a cross around his neck, prayed before meals, and planned his hiking route so he could attend church on Sundays. None of his fellow hikers would have guessed that he was a wanted man with multiple dark secrets. Ironically, the only skill he seemed to lack in his new life was the art of flying under the radar. His hunger for the spotlight, a deep-seated need for admiration, would ultimately prove to be his undoing. The Long Con. Over the course of 11 years from 1998 to 2009, Hammes allegedly embezzled more than $8.7 million from his employer. The scheme was sophisticated. He established a phantom account for an existing vendor at a new bank, an account he alone controlled. He would then deposit large payments, between $10,000 and $200,000 at a time, into the ghost account before transferring the money to his personal accounts. He paid an estimated $2.7 million in taxes on the stolen money, but failed to file tax returns for several years during the scheme. A shocking lack of attention to detail for an accountant. Or maybe the taxes he was paying on that much money gave him sticker shock. FBI Special Agent Jonathan Jones had this to say about Hammes's technique. Quote, "He got away with it for so long because he knew how to manipulate his subordinates and how not to raise accounting red flags." Unquote. No one described Hammes as the quiet accountant type. He was outspoken, almost overbearing. He liked to one-up people. His laugh was loud. One of his first wife's sisters recalled, when he laughed, everyone in the room knew it. He spent some of the stolen money on expensive scuba diving trips to the Caribbean. He went on these trips alone. When his first wife, Joy, asked where the money was coming from, he told her he'd invested in a software company and cleared an easy $100,000. In February 2009, the scheme began to unravel. Bank employees who handled accounts for the company and its vendor received canceled checks from an unfamiliar bank and brought the matter to the company's attention. The company's CFO investigated the issue, uncovered the scheme, and called the FBI. Secrets piled on secrets. The $8.7 million fraud was shocking, but it wasn't the only secret Hammes was carrying around in his backpack. In July of 2003, his first wife, Joy, died in a fire that some, especially Joy's family, felt was suspicious. She was home alone when the fire broke out. The couple's daughter was out on a date, and James Hammes was taking a late-night walk. Firefighters pulled her from the burning home, but she died of smoke inhalation without regaining consciousness. The fire department concluded that the blaze began because a chest of drawers was sitting on an extension cord. Insurance investigators attributed fire to faulty wiring in a ceiling fan. Both concluded that the fire was accidental. No criminal charges were filed. Hammes and his daughter moved into a new house across town. They sat on lawn furniture for about a month and a half. His daughter recalled that this period was a struggle for both of them, with her doing the grocery shopping and the cooking. In 2006, Hammes married his second wife, and their lives returned, more or less, to normal. Shortly before he disappeared in February 2009, law enforcement and the FBI learned that Hammes had a second family. Financial records led investigators to a high school girlfriend who, when interviewed, confirmed that she and Hammes had a relationship and a daughter together who was born in 1989. Authorities realized that Hammes had been leading a double life and supporting a second child for years without his primary family's knowledge. After Hammes disappeared, his daughter and second wife opened a room in their home that he kept locked. Inside, they found three books on how to disappear and obtain a new identity. There were also documents, newspaper obituaries, birth certificates, and death certificates for men who would have been his age had they lived. It looked like he'd been making plans to disappear. The road to Damascus. On a Saturday morning in May 2015, Bismarck's few hiking days came to an abrupt end. His arrest took place during the annual Appalachian Trail Days Festival, which attracts approximately 20,000 hikers to the small town of Damascus, Virginia. FBI agents and other law enforcement officers encircled the Montgomery Homestead Inn. While a group of three officers knocked on the front door, At least one officer was posted to guard the back door. They showed the inn's proprietor a photograph of a clean-shaven James Hammes. She identified him as Bismarck, a guest who had been staying at the inn from time to time since 2010. He had checked in the day before. She led agents to the room where he was staying and knocked on the door. When Hammes opened it, the agent stepped inside. His companion Hopper was also in the room. It was a peaceful arrest. No guns were drawn and no voices were raised. After a brief conversation, agents placed Hammes in handcuffs and took him away. Hopper appeared shocked. His downfall came from an unexpected source, a TV rerun. In March 2015, a hiker with the trail name Chair was at his home in Mississippi and happened to catch a rerun of the 2012 American Greed episode that featured Hammes. He had met Bismarck at a shelter along the southern half of the AT, spent a little more than a day traveling with him, and then never saw him again. Watching the episode, he had the nagging feeling that he had seen Hammes before somewhere. When it dawned on him that Bismarck was Hammes, he sent emails to the FBI, Hammes's daughter, and the show's producers. He included photos of Bismarck that he had taken on the trail. The FBI now had a place to look for Hammes, the Appalachian Trail. Were aware of his new look, Jerry Garcia with a headband and hiking boots, and had a name, Bismarck. Then agents learned that he made a habit of attending the Trail Day celebration. Habits make one predictable and findable. In October 2015, Hammes pled guilty to one count of wire fraud and agreed to pay nearly $7.7 million in restitution, $6.7 million to his company and $1 million to his company's insurer. In June 2016, he was sentenced to 96 months in prison. Epilogue. This is one of those stories that seems to have more questions than answers. First, where did the stolen money go? Allegedly, Hammes embezzled a total of $8.7 million over an 11-year period between 1998 and 2009. He was said to have invested most of the stolen funds in the stock market and suffered big losses during the severe market downturn in 2008. He paid $2.7 million in taxes to the IRS. There's no estimate of how much he spent on scuba equipment, lavish trips, flying lessons, etc. Second, was the 2003 fire that killed his first wife an accident? Third, why did Hammes choose to hide on the Appalachian Trail rather than flee to another country? Maybe he needed community more than anonymity. Maybe he couldn't move the money or get a passport. Perhaps hiking boots were on sale. Fourth, why did he keep raiding his company's accounts for more than a decade? He could have stopped at any point and substantially reduced his risk. Why was $2 million, $4 million, or $6 million not enough? Finally, which identity was real? James Hammes, the man who abandoned his family without a word? Or Bismarck, the kind, generous, religious thru-hiker? My best guess is neither. That's it for this episode of the Blue Ridge True Crime Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps more people find the show. Check the show notes for links to the Blue Ridge True Crime Substack and YouTube channel, and any story-related links. Until next time, I'll look for you on the back roads.